Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Catch with John Fisher on Blog Talk Radio, connecting life to faith.
We're just trying to get it together, trying to help their fellow man, hoping we can make it.
Welcome back, everyone, to Blog Talk Radio. Here we are on a Tuesday night, and one of my favorite things to do is Blog Talk Radio. I get to get a chance to talk and hear the thoughts of some of my favorite people. And tonight, especially, is really one of our most popular and asked about guests. We have back again, and his name is Randall Balmer. Randall is an American historian, especially about religion in America and evangelicalism in particular. And yet he has an amazing perspective on it. He has a journalistic perspective on American evangelicalism, and has done a number of books. Mine Eyes Have Seen the Glory, an encyclopedia of evangelicalism in America. I mean, he's done many different works that help us think about what is this phenomenon, especially as Christianity has become more and more popular and become more political and become more noticeable and, you know, a part of the media and a part of the news. And Randall really helps us make it through this very confusing reality that I don't think we all still fully understand what's really going on. But we are especially excited to have him on the show tonight, because I want to talk about one of his more recent books. It's 2014, came out. It's a biography of Jimmy Carter called Redeemer, The Life of Jimmy Carter. And we're gonna pick Randall's brain about why he wrote this book and what we can all learn from it. So, Randall, welcome back to Blog Talk Radio.
Glad to be here, John. Nice to talk to you. Thanks for the invitation.
You bet. Well, of course, we'll start with the proverbial "Why did you write this book?" question.
Well, I was an undergraduate student at Trinity College in Deerfield, Illinois, in the mid 1970s, and all of a sudden, a national figure popped on the scene, talking about himself as a born again Christian, and you know, this was the language that I had used to talk about myself, of course, and the world in which I grew up. But we were always a little bit kind of sheepish about talking about ourselves as being born again, especially when we were talking to somebody outside of evangelicalism. And
right.
It was striking to me that Jimmy Carter was unabashed about it. He was proud of it, and it got my attention. And so I began following his life and career. And for many years, had this kind of vague idea that I wanted someday to write a religious biography of Jimmy Carter, that is, one that took his faith seriously precisely because he took his faith seriously. And I thought that some of the other biographies really didn't give his faith and his beliefs the coverage that was warranted.
Wow. Wow. Let's ask you all my questions. That I have for you seem to be almost so broad that
that's all right,
and almost childish. But you know, I have so many. There are so many questions about Jimmy Carter, and I guess I would want to know what did you learn in writing a religious biography? What did you learn about him that you didn't know before? That's maybe the most significant type of thing.
That's a good question. I'll have to think about it as I start to answer that question. I guess I came away from our conversations with a sense that, you know, this is a person who really was and is serious about his faith. As you know, he just celebrated his 99th birthday this past Sunday. So,
wow.
You know, he's been around for a long time, and
wow.
His faith is utterly crucial to understanding his identity. Now, I guess the other thing that was striking to me is that Jimmy Carter had his born-again experience when he was 11 years old. And as he is talked about, you know, this was fairly standard for somebody growing up in a Southern Baptist congregation, as he did. His father, in fact, was one of his Sunday school teachers. And so that was, you know, you had your conversion experience, your born-again experience, and then, of course, baptism, particularly if you're in the Baptist tradition. And it was part of who he was growing up. But his real crisis of faith occurred after he ran for governor of Georgia in 1966. And he lost to one of the most famous segregationists in American history, Lester Maddox.
Oh, yeah.
And he came back to Plains, Georgia, which, of course, is his hometown. And he was utterly ruined by this. He was, contemporaries said that he would walk around town dejected with his head down. He wasn't sure what he was going to do with the rest of his life. He thought his political career was over. And then his sister, Ruth Carter Stapleton, and I'm sure many people remember her person, she was a Pentecostal evangelist since deceased. And Ruth Carter Stapleton came back to Plains to talk with her brother, Jimmy Carter. And they had a long walk together, at the conclusion of which Jimmy Carter decided to, again, I'm using evangelical language, which is very familiar to you, I'm sure, John, but to many people, other people as well. He decided to rededicate his life to Jesus. Mm. And, you know, again, this is a fairly standard thing in the evangelical world. And he was serious about it. And I'll give you an example of how serious he was. Mm. Within months, he undertook two mission trips with other Southern Baptist laymen, one of them to Lock Haven, Pennsylvania, and the other to Springfield, Massachusetts, where they went around literally door to door, knocking on doors to tell people about Jesus. Hmm. And the first time I ever met Jimmy Carter was at prior to an event at Emory University. And what he wanted to talk about with in front of this small group, maybe a dozen people, what he wanted to talk about was the unsurpassed joy of telling other people about Jesus. So
wow.
This renewal for him, his rededication, was very serious. And you know, not many of us, I have to say, and I'll include myself in that statement, not many of us go door to door, knocking on doors, telling people about Jesus. But this is what Jimmy Carter did on two occasions after his spiritual experience following the 1966 gubernatorial campaign.
You know, he's such a interesting. I can't even think of the right word for it. Not controversial, but he's a conundrum. I think, you know, right there in the middle of you know, the beginnings of right wing Christianity, and yet here he was, you know, an evangelical of a very different strain, something that we're not familiar with. And I think, you know, I think there are a lot of people that didn't even recognize him as an evangelical. Don't you think?
Yeah. Yes, I think you're right. And that's really tragic. And I think it's important to remember the context of the 1970s.
Yeah,
the 1970s was really interesting, and as I mentioned earlier in our conversation, I was a college student in the mid 1970s at an evangelical school. But in November of 1973, there was a remarkable gathering of evangelical leaders at the Wabash Street YMCA in Chicago, and they hammered out this document called the Chicago Declaration of Evangelical Social Concern. And I invite you and your listeners to look at it. It's on, you can find it on the internet. Make sure you look for the 1973 version of this. But what's striking about that statement was the extent to which it reflected the political and religious sentiments of 19th and early 20th century evangelicals. That is to say, the Chicago Declaration decried the persistence of racism in American society. It talked about the growing income gap between the most affluent and the poorest members of society. It bemoaned the fact that one of the most affluent nations in the world still had people going to bed hungry every night. It talked about the problem of militarism in American society, and it reaffirmed evangelicals' historic commitment to women's equality. It's a remarkable statement. And I call this progressive evangelicalism. And, you know, that's not a terribly controversial label. But in one of my conversations with Mr. Carter, I asked him if he was comfortable with that term describing him and his approach to social reform and to politics and so forth. And he said he was. He was evangelicalism is not a term that is used by a lot of Southerners, particularly Southern Baptists, but he said that he was very comfortable to be labeled in that by that term and to identify with that tradition.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
Yes, you're absolutely right. What happens, I think, tragically, during Carter's presidency, and we can talk about that if you want to, what happened, but tragically, that is when you have the emergence of the religious right. And,
mm-hmm.
of course, they turn dramatically against Jimmy Carter in favor of Ronald Reagan in 1980.
Right, right. I know you've written a lot on the factors that created the religious right,
right.
Where it all came from.
Right.
I'm not sure I want to get into all of that.
Yeah.
I'm just, I was always, when I really finally figured Jimmy Carter out, I don't think I knew him, could figure him out in the beginning. I didn't know where he was at. And then when I realized more, you know, about his faith and that it was for real, it was almost like I began to realize that he exhibited a faith that almost doesn't work in the public arena. Do you understand what I might be trying to say?
Yeah. Well, one of the things he kept quoting throughout his career was from Reinhold Niebuhr, who said that the sad duty of politics established justice in a sinful world. And Carter, again, quoted that many, many times throughout his career. So he understood that. And he understood that as a politician, particularly as a president, that he had competing responsibilities and obligations. And so one of the duties of the president is to uphold the law and to enforce the law. And even some laws that he did not care for all that much, he felt obligated to enforce. And, you know, I'm skirting toward the abortion issue here. Jimmy Carter was very much opposed to abortion personally, but he also recognized that he was, as president, responsible for enforcing and for respecting the Supreme Court decisions. And, mm-hmm. and at that time, with Roe v. Wade, he had to do that. Now, he got a lot of static for that from a lot of people, certainly conservative Catholics, but also in the 1980 election, evangelicals came after him on that issue. So that may account for what you were saying about your ambiguity, mm-hmm. your ambiguous feelings toward toward Jimmy Carter. But I think, if you look at his entire record and his presidency, he was very much concerned that if the United States was going to have any meaningful relationship with third world countries, particularly Latin American countries, we needed to renegotiate the Panama Canal treaties and move away from American colonialism. And I think, historians recognized that that was the right thing to do. He wanted to move American foreign policy away from the kind of reflexive dualism of the Cold War era toward an emphasis on human rights. And mm-hmm. Jimmy Carter's foreign policy succeeded in freeing a lot of political prisoners around the world because he emphasized the importance of human rights. Many environmentalists consider him to be the best environmental president ever in American history. Again, mm-hmm. he understood that the environment was God's creation, and if the environment is God's creation, if the natural world is God's creation, we need to protect it. So if you go down the line and look at Mr. Carter's presidency, and one of the wonderful things that's happening now, I think, is that historians are beginning to reassess his years in office, and he's beginning to look a whole lot better than he did in the years immediately after his after leaving office.
I was gonna say, he's got this reputation of being weak, like he was a weak president or something, and that's not true.
I don't think that's true.
No,
it's not true at all. I don't think it's true at all.
What would you say were his greatest strengths?
Well, I think I mentioned a couple of them already. I think the emphasis on human rights, I think, was very important, mm-hmm. Certainly a moral stand. He was very concerned about attaining peace in the Middle East, and most historians agree that he has done more to advance the cause of peace in the Middle East than any of his predecessors or any of his successors. And he understood the importance of trying to bring healing to that troubled part of the world. He appointed more women and more people of color to federal office than any other president in history. And if you just go through what he accomplished, it's really quite remarkable. One of his biggest disappointments, and certainly the biggest disappointment for Rosalynn, his wife, was the failure to ratify the Equal Rights Amendment to the Constitution. And again, that is very much consistent with 19th century evangelicalism and the push for women's equality. So these are things that he was able to do as president that I think are really quite important.
Wow, but why do you think he got the reputation of being weak? Where do you think that came from?
Well, I think it's important to remember the context, the historical context. I don't mm-hmm. think anybody being president in the late 1970s was going to have an easy time. And I've often said that Jimmy Carter was dealt a bad hand as president. And in many ways, it was a hand that he played badly at various times. But it was not easy. 1979, for example, was just a horrible year for Jimmy Carter. Yeah. Everything that could go wrong did. You know, everything from disco night at Comiskey Park in Chicago to Three Mile Island, the nuclear disaster, to the taking of hostages in Iran.
Yeah.
Everything just went wrong for him. I've often speculated, and you probably remember this, but in 1976, Gerald Ford was running for the Republican nomination. Of course, he won the Republican nomination. But Ronald Reagan very nearly took the Republican nomination in 1976. And I've often speculated that if Reagan had been the nominee in 76 and been elected in 1976, I think he too would have been a one-term president. It just was not easy to be president in the late 1970s. The Arab oil embargo, everything was going wrong. And I think that's one of the reasons that Carter came off as a weak president. The other thing that people don't remember about his time in office is that going into the 1980 election, the weekend before the election in November of 1980, going into that weekend, Reagan and Carter were tied in the polls. It was neck and neck, but it was just Carter's luck that Election Day coincided with the one-year taking of the anniversary of the taking of the hostages in Iran. And, of course, the media played that up over the weekend, and his support just dropped. And so he lost in a landslide. Let's remember also, it has now since been confirmed that the Reagan-Bush campaign conspired with Iran so that the American hostages would not be released before the election in 1980.
Oh,
and,
my.
And that certainly, I mean, yes, that's now been confirmed. I suspected it as I was writing the biography. A lot of people suspected it as well. But just in the last year or so, it's been confirmed that a deal was made. That, you know, frankly, is illegal, but nevertheless, that's what happened.
Yep. Wow. Oh, my. Well, I think...
The other thing to talk about, I think, probably would be Carter after he left the White House, if you want to
talk about that. I definitely want to talk about that, but I don't want to... I want to be sure and hear something. I'd love to hear something personal. And you, I mean, I do think you spent a good deal of time with him. Is that right?
I did, yes.
And you know, how was that? Tell us something. Can you tell us a personal story? Or yeah, it just, what was it like? Just hanging out with Jimmy Carter, you know?
Sure. Well, I didn't spend, you know, weeks or months with him, but I spent some time with him. He's a very private man, actually. And as I was writing the book, or after I finished the book, I concluded that the only person he fully trusted was Rosalind, his wife. And, of course, they've been married now 77 years, quite a remarkable marriage and relationship. I guess the anecdote I would pass on is that I was there down in Plains one Sunday to sit in on his Sunday school class at Maranatha Baptist Church, of course.
Oh, yeah.
And then we had a conversation after church in one of the offices of the church. And so we talked about various things. And then he mentioned a devotional book that he had just written. He's very proud of the fact that he's an author. And he's written, I think, something like 20 books. He's quite prolific, actually. Very proud of that. And I said I hadn't yet seen that devotional book. He said, well, you know, come on over to the house and I'll give you a copy. So I followed the Secret Service vehicles to his compound, and he went into the house to get the book. And while he was in the house, Rose and I were talking, just, you know, chatting briefly. He came out of the house and he said, I wasn't able to find you a new copy, but here's Rosalind's copy. I think it was called Through the Year with Jimmy Carter. I still have the book, of course. And he said to her, "You don't mind if I give him your copy, do you?" He kind of looked a bit sheepish about that. And of course, she said that was all right. And so I have Rosalind's copy of Through the Year with Jimmy Carter, his devotional meditations through the year.
Oh, wow. Wow. Isn't that great? Well, I tell you, I really often thought if a president, you know, was a Christian, a real Christian down into their heart,
mm-hmm.
that they would probably be like Jimmy Carter. I've always thought about that. And as maybe as far as a true, authentic believer in such a position, has there been anybody like him? You know, I mean, do you think?
I don't think so. I think he's a singular individual in that respect. Now, a lot of people say, well, George W. Bush claimed to be an evangelical Christian, and you know, I don't have any, you know, I'm not in the business of judging who is and who is not an authentic believer. And so if he says he is, I agree with him. But I think I think with Jimmy Carter, you have to look at how he has lived his life, the commitment that he's made because of his faith, and I think it bears out. And even in his policies as president, I would argue that he was very true to his convictions and true to what he believed.
What about after his presidency? You mentioned that, and I think that shows very real as well, doesn't it?
Well, I think so. I mean, the Habitat for Humanity, of course, but also the Carter Center. The Carter Center has succeeded now in eliminating or all but eliminating several tropical diseases. Wow. I mean, you think about that. That's just, that's quite remarkable. And and Carter is still apparently, keeping track of that. He's trying to get rid of the last guinea worm disease on the planet. Through the efforts of the Carter Center. And you think about presidential libraries. Now, I've done a lot of research in actually several presidential libraries, Reagan, Ford, Carter, Lyndon Johnson, John Kennedy, Herbert Hoover, and so forth. And most of these places are kind of celebratory museums. And if you go to the Carter Center, yes, you have the museum part of it that talks about his life, his career, and his presidency. But it's a working center where he is trying still, through the Carter Center, to eradicate disease, as I said, but also to ensure democratic elections around the country and around the world. And this, I think, is part of his legacy. In many ways, it's his second term, and he said that to me as well. He said, it's probably the case that if I had won re-election in 1980, I wouldn't have done some of the things that I've done since leaving the White House. It was a way of kind of certainly burnishing his legacy, and certainly we can understand that. But he felt that he had unfinished business from his time as president, and he wanted to finish it up.
Have you had a chance to hear what he thinks about where America is right now?
Oh, I think he was pretty much chagrined during the Trump presidency, he made no secret of that. He was very worried about where we were going as a nation. I think he saw the 2020 election as a course correction, but I think he's probably still worried about these sorts of things. Now he's since he's gone on hospice, he's pretty much incommunicado in terms of. Policy matters and so forth.
Yeah,
but he
did
show up. He and Rosalind did show up at the Peanut Festival parade in Plains last week. So he's still going strong. Quite a remarkable guy, really. Is.
Amazing. Well, my final question: what do you think we can learn now from Jimmy Carter that we can use now? In our life and in our place in the world,
I think what's striking to me about his is his consistency. That is his consistency in his faith, but the way in which his faith informed the way he lived his life. And even now, I think we see it going on to into hospice and saying, look, I'm ready for death. I don't have any worries about this. And he's made that clear many times over the last several decades. And he's prepared to meet Jesus, and he looks forward to that. And his life, I think, has been quite remarkably consistent as a man of faith.
Yeah. Wow. That's great. Well, I'm really glad I have time to look more deeply into this, and I hope our listeners will run out and get your book, and let's learn from this man. Kind of an obscure, turned into an obscure character in our history, but in many ways, you know, it's like, you know, nobody gave Jesus when he was here.
That's right. Well, I actually, in my book, I talk about Jimmy Carter as someone who came unto his own, and his own received him not.
Oh, that's true. That's so true. Well, this has been really good. Thank you so much. Redeemer, the Life of Jimmy Carter. Hope you go out and get it and see what we can learn from this man. And thank you, Randall, for finding these gems and opening them up to us to where we can grow and we can learn. Thank you.
Always a pleasure, John.
Okay, my friend. We'll see you later. Next time. How about that? We'll see you next time.
All right. Thanks, John. God bless.
You too. Bye-bye. Oh, that was so good.
Good.
Okay, folks.
You're listening to The Catch with John Fisher on Blog Talk Radio. Connecting life.
Let me go and get life with Jimmy Carter.
Get it together.
Stay tuned.
Trying to help the fellow man.
And see you tonight, Blog Talk Radio.
Hoping we can make it better.
God bless you all. We'll see you next week.